It's Professor Gotropia. This is the audio that goes with MGM versus Grokster, the final case where we're talking about indirect infringement. And this maybe starts to really give you a sense as to why we're delving so deeply into indirect infringement in this copyright section as opposed to in patents or trade secrets. And that is that what ends up becoming capable and kind of actual with the new kind of distributive technology network that we have today and the ease by which people can engage in what is copyright infringement, that going after every individual who copies a movie or copies a CD or MP3 file becomes almost untenable. And so the industry of content creators start to really try to go after the technology providers to put them on the hook, both to either kind of get control of them and stop them providing the technology that allows the users to copy and distribute with ease, but also maybe get them on board with helping them to police. And MGM versus Grokster came up after the Napster case. Here we are in the day and age of peer-to-peer sharing of files that made it really easy to have this decentralized network where I think Kazaa was the really popular one. Kind of the modern would be BitTorrent, where I've got this nice distributed technology that allows for a very robust network of sharing where I can ask around. And so if you're looking at the first slide here, I can ask around if I'm a client with these super nodes and say, hey, do you know anyone in my current neighborhood that has this Whitney Houston song, Bodyguard, or whatever? I can't remember the song that it was from the movie, but I've watched it so many times. Such great work by Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston. Not only I ask them, but then that super node asks other super nodes, and eventually I find someone who has a copy of it, and then I get this direct connection between the two clients, and we can share the file. And the other thing that allows me to do is when I collect files, I then start telling other people, hey, guess what? I've got these files. I tell those to these super nodes. The super nodes tell other people, etc. And so we have really easy sharing and distribution of files. Well, MGM, all the content creators are not happy about this, kind of the way they weren't happy about the Betamax and VCR. And they could sue the direct infringer. The direct infringer is, and I won't put you on this, but let's say me, who's actually downloading some of these songs and sharing them with others. But that's a real whack-a-mole game, right? Because there's millions of us out there. They're hard for them to determine who is who of those individuals. And man, wouldn't it be more efficient if I could just sue directly the distributor of the technology? Because if I take the technology out of everybody's hands, then the infringement's not going to occur, right? And I'm in good shape. And so that's why we're in an indirect infringement realm. And so we get to the different theories, right? So to go to the next slide, let's talk about the two theories that we know about, right? Vicarious liability and contributory infringement. So what about vicarious liability? Here, is there profit from the infringement? It turns out there is, kind of clearly profit from the infringement. They are making more money by people engaged in infringing activity as opposed to non-infringing activity on the network. The ad revenue is better. They've got these top 10 lists. They're even trying to kind of sell information to content creators that they've got because of the trading that's going on the Grokster network and Kazaa and LimeWire networks, etc. However, just like with Sony, and I think here you actually see the technologists learn from Sony and hire an attorney on board, they do not have the ability to control because this is a purely peer-to-peer distributed network. I can't control what Professor Gotropia puts on his Grokster software, what he trades and doesn't trade, because I basically have just let the Grokster software go out there in the wild. And this is really, quite frankly, intentional. Because prior to this, there was Napster, and the difference between Grokster and Napster was Napster, the company, actually kept the directory listing. Where are all the Whitney Houston songs? Okay, you need to go talk to Professor Gotropia if you need a Whitney Houston song. And so Napster actually did have the right and ability to control because they could take down the directory and the whole thing would go down. Well, here, leveraging peer-to-peer networks, The distributed facet of it meant that Grokster didn't have an index at all. And even if Grokster took its index down, the robustness of the network is that we had all these super nodes, and that stuff could be everywhere. And so we couldn't have vicarious infringement here, and it's actually intentional. The intentionally not providing that kind of overt control by the technologists, the device creator that put it out there. So what about contributory infringement? And this was the real hope when MGM versus Grokster went to the Supreme Court, is that we would get a sense as to what do we mean by capable and substantial. And we really get some understanding as to whether there's contributory infringement or not. So the first question is whether we've got knowledge that infringing is occurring. There's really good evidence that they know, in some ways we'll talk about here in just a second, but they intended for infringement to occur. But then the question is, okay, well, is this thing capable of substantial non-infringing uses? And unlike Sony, here the main use that's being done right now with the peer-to-peer network is infringing uses. People are sharing those Whitney Houston songs. And so this would be a great instance where we can really test whether it's substantial. And what do we mean by substantial? Is it quantity, right, or is it quality? Because there are some other things being shared on these peer-to-peer networks. And also, how does capable play in here, right? The hope was that we would really get this understanding of, okay, fine, even if it's not currently being used for substantial non-infringed uses, clearly the peer-to-peer network is capable of this happening. And actually, peer-to-peer technologies, because they're so robust, if one node goes down, the network kind of corrects itself and finds other places to get the information. Clearly, it's capable of some non-infringing uses, even if it's currently not being used for non-infringing uses. That was the hope the court would answer that question. Turns out the majority doesn't do that. If you go to the next slide, instead, they really push down another avenue of either we can think about this as another prong of contributory infringement, or that they're really taking and creating a third category of secondary liability, induced infringement for copyright law, which might be very similar to what we saw in patent law under 35 U.S.C. 271B. So on this third one, right, well, what do we do about the fact that Grokster really was engaged with statements or actions that directly promoted infringement by its users? There is really good evidence that there was intent to induce here. That is, they sent out the software and ads to those people who had been using Napster, which we knew was an infringing use before, and said, hey, I know Napster's gone. You should take a look at Kazaa, LimeWire, or Grokster. They specifically didn't put any control measures in place. The reason they didn't do that is because they wanted the infringement to occur. They specifically were making money from the infringement by these advertisements, these top 10 lists, et cetera. And so there was really good evidence that we might have a technology that, yes, is capable of substantial non-infringing uses, but here the person providing the technology really intends it to be used for infringement. So the Supreme Court says that we clearly have inducement here, right? Which creates this interesting scenario where I could have the same technology, one provided by Party A with targeted ads and instructions on how to infringe, etc., and that person could be liable for infringement, indirect infringement under inducement. But the other person provides the exact same technology but doesn't say anything about what to do with it. Right? They couldn't be liable for inducement, and maybe they're not liable for contributory infringement because there are substantial non-infringing uses that you could use for that item. And so the potential analog after MGM versus Grokster is BitTorrent, which is put out there initially by just a developer that wanted to say, how do I share really big files and see how those get kind of put together and seeded and distributed across networks. And it turns out that the main thing that BitTorrent was used for, I don't know, maybe it's still used for, was movies at the time. But it's capable of substantial non-infringing uses, moving other big, large files around. And it turns out the creator of BitTorrent said nothing about what it should be used for, right, and couldn't be liable for inducement. And so in the end, in some ways, both of the parties in MGM versus Grokster were upset about the holding. Grokster, because they were found liable for inducement. But MGM was upset, and the reason they were upset is because they really wanted to be able to get some understanding as to what contributory infringement is all about, because they like a contributory infringement because I don't care as much as about what you tell your users to do, but what your users are actually using it for. And we don't get that direction here, and it kind of took a little bit of the winds out of the sail of the industry to be able to use secondary liability to really rein in infringements that occur. If you go to the final slide, here we've got a hypothetical. Industrial music company develops and produces the DJ Remixer, a digital music computer for home and personal use. The DJ Remixer allows individuals to edit and remix sound clips, their own, and those derived from copyrighted sound recordings to produce mashups. IAM markets its device for amateur and professional DJs who want to edit their own works, but IAM knows that many, if not most, of the devices it sells are used for sampling or otherwise copying copyrighted works without authorization. In fact, it's come to IAM's attention that Girl Talk, we didn't do Problem 4-6. I don't know if you've heard of Girl Talk, it's some really great music, but it is a bunch of samples and uses of previous music, uses a DJ Remixer device. Is IAM guilty of contributory infringement? So let's stop there. What do we need for contributory infringement? We need a direct infringer first, right? Who's that direct infringer? Girl Talk's the direct infringer, right? If we assume that the samples are not fair use, that we have actual copying and it's improper appropriation. And so for contributory infringement, we need knowledge. We do have knowledge here. It's come to IAM's attention that they use the DJ Remixer device. But then we get to the difficult question. Is the DJ Remixer capable of substantial non-infringing uses? And it looks like it is, because the device is actually used by amateur and professional DJs who want to edit their own works, right? Even if many, if not most, sell it, right? We know at least it's used some for non-infringing uses. We might have this question about whether those are substantial or not. Maybe it might not be substantial in quantity, but maybe substantial in quality because it allows me to do this stuff for personal use. It clearly shows that it's capable of doing those things. And if we add in it that maybe some of these personal uses are fair use because they're transformative works, they're non-commercial, so I don't get the presumption of factor four, I could use that to push even harder to say that, look, these are substantial, these are capable of substantial non-infringing uses. The next question is, if so, with every sale or only with some sale, if it's liable for contributory infringement, every sale it's liable. Because the device itself is basically, we're determining, is specially made to allow infringements to occur. What if IAM were to advertise that Girl Talk uses a DJ Remixer? Now we're getting into the land of inducement, right? This is the idea that I'm telling people, hey, you can use this for infringing purposes. This is something you can do to engage in infringement, be like Girl Talk. And if I can find him liable for inducement, then I could get the sale of the DJ Remixer enjoined, which is weird because with inducement, it's more about who's selling it than the item itself. But I could definitely get Industrial Music Company enjoined from selling the DJ Mixer. Now, maybe others could end up selling a similar product but not say as much about it if we find that it's capable of substantial non-infringing uses, that it's not liable under contributory infringement. And that's the interesting thing that inducement infringement kind of presents. Final point here is it doesn't ask about vicarious liability. I think the reason it doesn't ask about vicarious liability is that right and control prong. I'm sure I make money from the infringement because I sold it to Girl Talk and others to engage in infringing activities, but I don't exercise the right and ability to actually control it. And so that's where we know, right, I don't have this ability to control, and so I can't be liable for vicarious liability.